Hello.
You all right?
How's it going?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
All right, so as you can hear, got another guest. I've got Richard Mearns. How's it going?
I'm good, Scott. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
Yeah. Did you have a good day yesterday?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah,
It's
good.
a lot of talent on show.
Yeah? Oh, the kickboxing. How was
Yeah,
that?
it was good. My niece has, it was an invitation, the
Yeah?
European Invitational. So it's the first time I've watched a fight, actually.
Oh,
She kept saying
really?
to me, "Oh, come watch me, come watch me." And so, because it was in the town where I live, so I was like, "Yeah, I'll come down." And
Yeah.
my dad fosters
Oh,
two girls as well, so they were fighting as well. And one of them's a
really?
killer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was good. Monday, he's ended up taking a silver in continuous
Yeah.
in her weight category and bronze in points. So
Oh, that's brilliant.
it's qualified her for the worlds. So yeah, it's
Yeah,
good.
that's amazing. Tournaments are hard. It's like you got a lot of pressure for one fight, you get that done. And then you're going back in there straight away for
Yeah,
another fight.
well,
It's a long day.
it was hard because like she'd won in a tournament before and she'd got a gold and a silver out of it. But when she got the silver, it was my dad's foster, the girl that my dad fosters. They were
Yeah.
fighting each other, so they knew each other, so they were just sort of like sharing the honors, sort of thing.
Okay.
And so she wasn't too disappointed. But obviously, that was it was a, like a normal tournament, but it wasn't an interclub. It was a step up from an interclub.
Yeah.
So obviously, when they've gone there yesterday, they've gone to the Europeans. It's like a step up in competition, like anywhere really.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good. So that's the three of them have qualified for the Worlds in Manchester in October.
Oh, excellent. You're going to
So
watch that?
yeah. Well, we might be going with MMA UK to cover the event
Oh,
because whilst
wicked.
I
That's
was there,
good.
when
Because
I
kickboxing could do with some more exposure.
well,
Definitely.
because I done
Yeah.
the. I didn't expect to be there all day. I didn't think I was
Yeah.
going to be there all day. And I'd done a Facebook Live on my personal Facebook. And Peter Knox, who helps run MMA UK, messaged me. He's like, "Oh, where are you?" I said, "Oh, I'm at the European Champions Invitational." He was like, "Oh, you
Yeah.
should have said you could have done it on the page." I was like, "Well, I didn't know." Like, he was like, "Yeah."
Yeah.
So we spoke through the day and we're going to try and sort of get a team together and go up to the worlds
Yeah, that's
to go
good.
for it. But yeah.
Yeah. I was kickboxing for years before my MMA, and there was just no coverage,
Yeah.
no nothing. And then I was thinking to myself, like, can I go anywhere with this? Like, other than just fighting for the sake of fighting. So, yeah, I do love kickboxing. It's above waist, right? Yesterday, was it?
Yeah,
With the
it's
trousers on and the boots.
yeah, full contact with helmets as well.
Okay.
So yeah, it was good. But yeah, it was teams from everywhere. There was Germany, Ireland, Holland, everywhere. So there's
Awesome.
some good talent around Europe coming through.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
it was weird watching it, like, because there was they were like some of them were from ages 5 to like, and then they had the men's, and I was just like watching the kids when I was like trying not to get too involved and stuff,
Yeah.
like watching my niece. But
Yeah.
yeah, it's hard, like, because like you said, when they have one fight and then they go to the next one, it was weird for me because. Obviously, from watching like mixed martial arts and doing kickboxing myself and stuff like that, to then just trying to be a spectator, so to
Yeah.
speak, and sort of having the knowledge that I do. My niece was like, "Oh, what did I do wrong there?" Or this, that, the other. I'm like, "Look, I'm just watching. You've got coaches here. Like, don't come to me because you think I might know more than what they do." I said, "Because I don't." Let's get that straight away. I said, "I don't." I said, "What they might tell you is what they know." I said, "But you might ask me what I think, and I might tell you what they don't seem to see." I said, "But it's a balance of it." I said, "But I'm here to watch." But then, obviously, when they lose and stuff like that, I had to just keep saying to them, "Look, just look where you are," because my niece is only 11. She got upset when she got a bronze. I said, "Look, you're at the European Invitational." I said, "You've been invited to fight here." I said, "This is a big stage." I said, "It's the same with anything." I said, "If you get invited to go somewhere." That's confidence straight off the bat. I said,
It's a young age, 11 as well.
"Yeah." I said, "You should take that." I said, "You should be proud of what you're doing here." I said, "Yeah, you want to win." I said, "But make sure you're having fun as well." I said, "If it's not fun,"
Definitely.
I said, "it's not going to be worth it." I
Yeah.
said, "Because if you're solely going in there just to win," I said,
Yeah.
"You've already qualified because when she got her silver, she'd already qualified for the worlds, even at
Yeah.
continuous." I said to her, look, points is just a bonus. I said, you're still going to the Wilds. I said, take that. I said, and just go and enjoy the rest of it. But obviously, people shouting from the side and stuff like that. I think some of the girls just got it, and it was a bit too much for a few of them. But yeah.
Yeah. So it's sort of semi-contact, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kickboxing. It's interesting. There's so many styles of kickboxing. I fought in the above waist before, but it's like full contact.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was horrendous. That was because they got really good hands as well.
Yeah, see. Yeah,
and there's a few guys that have transitioned well into MMA with that, like MVP and Wonderboy Thompson, that sort of style of kickboxing, aren't they?
Yeah, see.
Yeah.
With
devastating strikers.
Yeah, well, some of them, they like sort of done the splits, the standing splits, and that's how they were coming out. And when they were shuffling along and doing kicks and stuff like that, they were obviously just keeping the distance. Because for a head kick or a landed kick flush, you get 2 points. So they trained, and their whole team, like from 6 years old to the women that were fighting at 22, that's how they were coming into every fight. And even the men, because they knew that's how they could win it. And that's what they were doing. They were just going there to win it instead of testing themselves as in like full performance sort of thing and not really letting their hands go. So when they were getting hit, they were like, oh, shit, like, oh my god, I've been hit.
Yeah.
Whereas the rest of them were just sort of coming in like a normal kickboxing stance, feet on the floor, hands up, like ready to scrap.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good. So it's good. It's good. And like Peter said to me when he messaged me, like, oh, kickboxing doesn't get enough coverage. And obviously, you only get some events now have started throwing a few in there. Like, you get smaller K1 events and stuff, and they'll be like, oh, we've got a kickboxing event fight on here, so we'll throw this in here and stuff like that. But I always wondered
what it's just like, why isn't like K1 especially, why isn't it on TV?
Yeah,
like, why do the public love boxing so much, but when you get K1 kickboxing and the madness that goes on, I was like, why isn't this on TV? Like, it's insane, like, just the level of skill and like just the crazy finishes.
Yeah, it's like Pride. I don't get why they didn't push Pride more. It's sort of in the same area. But there's an organisation, I can't remember who it was, or who it is, sorry. And they're doing an event in Birmingham, I think. And they've got a cage right next to a ring. And the whole night they're having MMA fights in the cage and then K1 and kickboxing in the ring. So when people obviously go and watch it, they can watch both of them side by side, and they're doing a fight in each. Which is good.
Bellator and Glory do that one.
Yeah, I think it was. And they're planning on doing another one.
Yeah.
So
I have to go down.
So yeah, it's looking good, but it's good stuff. So how are things with you? I know you've got a fight announcement and you're ready to start.
Pretty much just training. It's quite exhausting, but it's good. You know, I'm doing cardio in the morning when I can. This fight camp's, it's going really well. Like, a lot of times I've had this habit in fight camps of just pushing myself too hard, especially with the running. I do lots of running, lots of cardio, and then I'd wake up mornings and my knees would just be hurting. I'd still have blisters on my feet, but I'd still go for a run. Do you know what I mean? I was just sort of like, that was my sort of older way of thinking. But it comes through when I fight, that sort of mentality. But this time around, I've been like, my weight's pretty good, so if I've not needed to do cardio one morning, I'd get that extra sleep, and then I'd have a much higher output in the evening. And my training in the evening has been brilliant as well. I've been doing hard sparring rounds with some good professionals that we got there without fatiguing.
Like, yeah.
In my old fight camps, I would, because of the sort of calorie restricted diet, I'd get into the third round and like I just felt there's no power in my punches, and my feet weren't responding when I'd try to evade shots. But this time around, my body feels good, my weight's coming down, and training's going well, making massive improvements. I think this year has been one of the years that I've improved the most. Definitely, it's just been great.
Yeah,
it's been a great year of training for me.
So with, like you said, obviously, even if you have blisters and stuff like that, and you still keep going and stuff, do you ever worry about overdoing it, so to speak? Like, I caught up on The Ultimate Fighter. Have you watched this season? so far?
I've only seen a couple episodes with Tom. Literally, actually, I was with my girlfriend. We watched the first episode. Not a lot happened. I remember the guy got choked out seven, really quick.
11 seconds. Yeah,
Gunther, wasn't it?
Yeah, Gunther, he's a weird guy.
Yeah, yeah, he's so nice. Yeah, but like, I don't think that camera angle when he interviews him does him justice. No. Like, his eyes are crazy.
Yeah,
it's like,
but that Joe Giannati looks like a good guy.
Yeah, he submitted him really quickly.
Yeah,
very smart guy, it seemed. And then I watched, it was actually such entertainment. I watched the episode where Duolani, I mean, can I say spoilers on here? I suppose most people would watch these episodes by now.
Yeah, I think it's on episode 8 or 9.
Yeah, so, well, Duolani thought, and I just find him hilarious. Just like his interviews, his home videos I was watching.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And then
that.
Me, it's comedy gold. Like, just the, like, I don't know, just like...
Well, yeah, you see everyone else's, home video, and it's like...
Yeah.
Oh, this is my girlfriend. This is my kids. Like, here's my dog. Like, this is where I work. And they're showing their family and their training center. And Delaney's like, yeah, I've got 100 G's. I've got 20 grand Rolex on. And it's just like,
the best bit is where he's in his room. He's like, look at these bed sheets. These bed sheets cost more than your life. And I was just like, what the hell? Can we get back to the fighting now?
But
it was so funny.
See, the best bit of that episode was for me is when they actually done the face off and he started crying.
Oh, did he? I didn't see that.
Yeah, they done the face off and he had his shades on and his leather jacket and his Louis Vuitton backpack. And he stood in front of Tyler Diamond and he sort of wiped his eye. And DC turned around straight away and went, are you crying? And he was like, nah, my eye always waters. My eye always waters.
And Tyler, I think DC's been ribbing him a bit, hasn't he? Yeah.
But because obviously Jay Cuccinello's now back in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's been given another shot. And he's fighting Tyler Diamond.
Oh,
and when they done the face off after the fight that Tyler Diamond had with Thingy, Jay Cuccinello stood there and said, "Don't worry, I'm not going to cry for you." And that was it. And they were all serious, and then everyone just started laughing. That was it. They were back on Delaney taking the piss out of him.
Yeah, what an experience that must be for all them guys.
What I was getting at, did you see the one with the guy from Ireland that fights SBG?
I had Richie Smullins pulled out from like a cramp, but this must be a cramp of some different kind. Like,
well, when on the episode, he said that he was training and everything like that. And when they were doing, like the day before, I think it was, they're on a treadmill, and he says, and obviously, you know how when they do the interviews, like before of the fight and stuff like that, with the fight, he was saying, he says, I've run more here yesterday on the bike than what I have in my whole last training camp. He said, I run 13 miles on the bike, on the treadmill yesterday. He said, and then I'd done 4 miles on the bike. And he had something wrong with his enzymes and his blood wasn't flowing properly. That's why he couldn't walk with his cramp. And so I think that's sort of like overworking it, because obviously he's not used to it. If he's never done it previous.
I really don't understand that. Why is he running so much? The training should have already been done.
Yeah.
They had months to get prepared for that show.
I think they were just trying to push them and push them so they didn't gas out, sort of thing. But if anything, like, obviously as a pro yourself, you should have turned around and said, look, I've never done this before. I know I want to get to the next level. I normally only do 4 miles. Maybe I'll do five or six, not 13. Yeah. And obviously it's backfired on him because he couldn't walk.
That's crazy, because they should have entered in the house. They should be in the shape of their life, and like, I know they pushed them in the show, but I want, because I don't know how long they're out there for, 6 weeks or something.
Yeah, this is one of the shorter series,
and it's like, that's not really a fight camp. Like, some of them might be fighting on the first week of them, 6 weeks, I think.
Yeah
So really, basically, you got to turn up in incredible shape, and then whilst you're there, all you got to do is sort of jog, keep the weight down, and do a bit of pads. I don't know, but they need some hardcore training montages for the TV, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I spoke to Luis Antonio Pena, who was obviously on this series.
I listened to that podcast. That was really good.
And well, I was shocked that he actually said, because obviously, seeing what we see here, I was like, is it finished? Like, has the whole series finished, or are they still doing it and then doing it 2 weeks later, releasing it? Because they've done that before, didn't they? They stayed in the house and released it week by week whilst they were still there, sort of thing. So it was like a day later to what actually happened.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I'll just message him, see what it says. And then he was like, yeah, that's sound. I was like, oh, ace. Like, oh my God. But yeah, he was saying like, it's really hard because obviously they try and keep their weight down and stuff like that. But normally when they're at home, obviously, well, you know yourself, like if you're in a training camp, you'll go to the gym, you'll go and do whatever, and then you'll relax. He says, but they only have two times where they train during the day, and they have to try and get all of that in them 2 times. And then when they go back to the house, they can't do anything. They've got nothing to do. Like, they're just sat there basically. So
really,
he said it's
boredom.
Yeah. He says
you can put weight on from boredom. It's so easy.
Well, yeah. If you just sat there, like they've got treadmills and stuff in the house, but if you've just trained for 2 hours, then you're coming back for 2 hours to have a rest and then going back to train for 2 hours again. When you go back to the house, you don't want to sit there and go on a treadmill again. Like,
yeah, I'd go insane in that house.
Yeah.
It's people I'm going to fight. And I'm like, right, let's just do it now. Yeah. Living room, all of us.
You've got to have some sort of a different sort of mentality to get there. Obviously, it'd be like an army barracks, like, apart from you're going to fight them. But
And you got to be, all week long, you've got to be cool with them, humble with them, civil with them. But you're like, which one of these am I going to be fighting? Like,
yeah, the week? And like, potentially you could fight all of them. Yeah. But yeah, like I love it how it all kicks off, and like Tough was what got me watching MMA, Forrest Griffin, Stefan Bonner, like finale and stuff. And then my favorite one is probably the Ortiz Shamrock one, because they genuinely hated each other.
The only one I've actually seen was when Michael Bisping coached against Dan Henderson, and that was a great series. But, yeah, I'd like to watch some more. I'd like to actually just go and binge watch this series. At the moment, I've got this fight coming up.
Yeah.
I don't really get much time to watch any TV whatsoever.
So, yeah. Do you want to announce your fight?
So, it's the 7th of July. And I'm returning to the Five Star Championships cage, which is really exciting. I'm happy to be going back there because I was the amateur champion on that show. And I really love fighting there. My opponent is Bane Dundervan. And he's fighting out of Nova Forza. So it's going to be a good fight. Both very well accomplished amateurs and sort of yet to make any mark on the professional scene. So it's good. It's an even playing field. And both quite athletic guys. It's going to be great. Okay. I won't give too much away as to what's going to happen. I know what's happening.
Good stuff. So, like, obviously, had a look at your amateur record, undefeated as an amateur. And then, obviously, when you made the step up to pro, was it a bit of a shock for you? Or
Actually, I'm not undefeated as an amateur. A lot of people thought I was. But for years, I was kickboxing before the MMA, and then Tom was training at an MMA facility. And I'd done many kickboxing fights. And then, so like I mentioned at the start of the podcast, I was sort of wondering, where is the future in kickboxing? I wasn't so sure. And I loved MMA, like, just as much. I was such a huge fan watching it on the TV. And then I thought, I'm going to have to go train with my brother. And I had great striking. It was just so frustrating when you're doing some MMA rounds and they're not going to let you strike. They keep taking you down.
Yeah.
After the kickboxing career, I jumped, because I had so much fight experience, I jumped pretty quickly into the cage, like with sort of very limited skills. And I lost my first two. My first one, I lost by split decision. I like hammered this guy in the feet, and then he got a takedown per round, and then it got pretty boring from there. But even back then, I had really active guard, active hips.
Yeah.
Was throwing up triangle attempts. Had a very close armbar attempt, just not the knowledge to finish that. And then the second one, which was at lightweight, both were at lightweight. The second one, I lost early in round one due to armbar. I just sort of, the guy was quite big. He clearly was more experienced than me in the cage, and he'd done a good weight cut, overpowered me, and I'm sort of thinking, right, I need to get back to my feet. How do I get back to my feet? And then eventually, sort of, just got armbarred. So, them two losses set me up for the 6-fight win streak.
Yeah,
amateur. Honestly, this if you learn from your losses, as cliche as it is, that's how you get so much better. And so I thought, right, well, clearly I'm just over eager here. Then two sort of fights were quite soon after I'd even just started learning my grappling. So I just went away. And I just got so obsessed with my grappling. That is what lost me my first two fights. And then I started doing lots of BJJ comps. And then I just went on that absolute tear.
Yeah, so...
So I just took my time with it and just really obsessed over the aspects of the game that I was missing. And that it's almost overtook my passion for the kickboxing now. I love jiu-jitsu. I love wrestling. It's so exciting. So that's the amateur career, really. It's actually 6-2.
Just don't tell Tapology because they've got you 6-0.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I'll keep it. I won't let him know.
But like you said, like you love the ground game and stuff like that. So obviously I trained at kickboxing when I was a kid as well. When I went to MMA after a few years and stuff like that, I thought to myself, obviously I had it in my head, like, oh yeah, I'm going to love the stand up. I'm going to, like, it's going to be my dominant thing. Sort of, mm-hmm. That's going to be the area where I shine. And then obviously, like you said, when you get taken down and you're thinking, oh shit, like the first time you get taken down and
it's frustrating.
Yeah. And people, like, obviously when you train, like you said, when you train, BJJ, it sort of gives you that composure that you know you'll be able to get back there. But obviously when you first start and you get taken down, you just try and get angry, which makes it worse for you because you want to get back up, and you're like, it's disappointment in yourself, so to speak, and frustration to yourself. And you just try as much as you can to get back up, which makes it worse because then obviously your opponent can sort of tell and then use it against you.
If you can't grapple, it's truly exhausting. It's like... The person that's imposing the grappling, although they're the one that's pushing the work right, if they've got all their techniques right, they're not actually working that hard. And it's the person that's defending is just spending so much energy just because they're doing everything wrong. Everything they do, they're a beat behind the person that's pressing the grappling. And they'll get very exhausted pretty quick. And that's sometimes when you find a lot of grapplers can TKO people on the feet. They've just sap their energy and just taking them out. Also, wrestlers, I tend to find when they pick up the striking, the boxing is pretty devastating because they've got such good understanding of distance. If they can shoot for a single leg, which is easier said than done, or shoot for double legs, they know that they can land a good cross, a good hook, good overhand. Look at Michael Chandler, how amazing his distancing is. He knows exactly when he can throw them power bombs. Because it's the same as his wrestling distance.
Yeah, it's, like you said, it's the distance and the timing as well, and making sure you don't rush anything, so you don't get caught. But I always say to people that the wrestlers have got the best cardio as well. Like you said, when even if they're pushing the fight, people might watch it. Like if they say, but he was on the top and he was wasting all his energy. And when you hear commentators saying, oh, he's wasting energy, by trying to take him down and try and take him down. No, like, obviously...
My first wrestling class, like, proper wrestling, like, we've got a little Moldovan fella called Grisha at BST, and he is incredible. He's very small, but it doesn't matter how big this you are. He'll pick you up, chuck you on your head. And my first wrestling class, I thought, yeah, wrestling, this is going to be so much fun. I thought I'd be good at it because being a twin, me and my brother, like, honestly, the moment we were born, just wrestling every day, just tearing up the house, curtains getting ripped down between me and him. I think this is why, like, the striking, although that's where I started, it wasn't as natural for me as the grappling. And I think I had a good grappling instinct just from having a twin brother, like, just fighting all the time with him. So I thought I'd be good when I go wrestling, and I just wasn't. Grisha kept putting 3-minute rounds on, and then not many people turned up to the class on that day. So it was like me, some other guy, and Grisha. And I swear, I was nearly cried on that session. I just couldn't believe it. How little I knew. But But yeah, my wrestling's a lot better now.
Yeah, and obviously, yeah. Like you said, you're a twin, so you've got Tom there to train with, yeah. Which is good, because this is what I said to Tom the other day. It's good that, because you have to have that trust and the faith in your training partners and stuff like that. I mean,
oh, yeah.
What's more trust and faith in your brother? So your twin, exactly. Your twin brother. Like
me and Tom will spar hard, but with so much trust in each other, do you know what I mean? Sometimes you can't really push the sparring with certain people. You don't know how it's going to go. But yeah, he's the best training partner. Like there isn't a more perfect training partner you could have. So yeah, I'm really, really fortunate.
Yeah.
But that's that. I suppose that on the subject of Tom, this is one of the difficult. It's a slight challenge during this fight camp. I'm now without my my best training partner. As I'm sure we all know what happened if we watch Bellator 200. So I'm having to do this fight camp without him, but he's still in the gym. So he's hitting the bag with one hand. He's kind of like just got his other one sort of just dangling. when he comes back, you're going to watch the, I think it's the right hand is a good one. There's going to be some devastating power on that. But yeah.
Yeah, that's what he was saying to me the other day, that it's hard for him at the minute, because obviously he's used to being in the gym and stuff like that. And he's just keeping busy. And obviously that's what he kind of has to do to keep his mentality there, instead of, because it could obviously, some people it might send him to a dark place, but obviously he's keeping himself busy to make sure he's staying fresh, he's staying active, he's keeping that sharpness, even in his head, because quite a lot of percentage of the fighting game is mentality. If you haven't got the right mentality going into the fight, then you've already lost. Mm.
Yeah, definitely. So, Tom's like one of the truest champions through and through. Like, it's been very difficult for him with this dislocation. And like, you know, I'll see him one day and he's so positive. He's got plans. He's obsessing over his physio. He's not actually had any physio. He's just sort of doing it all himself. Like thinking, okay, I'm doing this today. I'm able to move these fingers. Like, and now the next day that I'm rotating my wrist like this. And he's and then you meet him up the other day and he's sort of like, still angry about the whole thing. And then they go to him the next day and he's sort of still there again. He's massaging his bicep and then just really, he's obsessing over his recovery. So I'm confident for him that he'll make a good comeback.
He was telling me that he's just doing more and more and more to try and obviously get back there. Obviously, it's like you said, it's not just for him. Like you said, it's you've lost your best training partner. So it's not just impacted him. Obviously, it's probably impacted him the most, obviously, because it was his fight career. Yeah. But as a team, it's still impacted everyone else, because obviously, not just for yourself, but if he trains with other guys and stuff like that, and people see him, like kind of what you see him like, as one of the best training partners. So they know the limits that they can push to and stuff like that. So it could kind of put a downer on like the team sort of thing. But like with him keeping the mentality, keeping fresh, still being in the gym and stuff, even just using the one hand or kicking and stuff like that, people seeing him in the gym, that could bring the confidence back up. And they'll be like, do you know what? If he can do that after that, then we know he's still here. And then obviously keeping the mental state, keeping encouraging people and stuff like that. Because I asked him, is it good for you? Not obviously, it's not good for him, but now he's got this time off, does he take a step back to sort of work on coaching for what he could do in the future? And obviously, because I know he trains with yourself and stuff like that. So whilst he's there, is he looking at like different techniques of how he can help people and tell people like, oh, instead of doing that, if you do this, this might work. And he was like, yeah or no, it's kind of hard, he says, because it's really frustrating, because obviously he just wants to be in there. But in a sense, it's...
saying his motivation is sky high one day, and then the next day it's sort of rock bottom. It's because we're both just baffled and confused as to what happened. We felt that fight was a sure win. Tom was going to get some good cash and move on to the next one and really excel his career. I mean, that's like after like he's tested himself big time this year, and them kind of fights you think are only going to just really boost your career. Like he's fighting tough guys and he's looking great doing it. But he's just had a bit of a bad run of luck. But I said to him, look, you know, we've been dealt a pretty bad hand here, but we got to like make the positives out of this. So, and it, you know, he'll come back and he's going to inspire a lot of people. It'll just make him an even greater champion. Like, when he sort of shows people, like, it doesn't matter what sort of you go through, you just if you decide you want something, then you can have that. And that's what he did with his ankle break. He broke his ankle badly, like the snap and the pop I heard when he was at the gym that day. He composed himself again. He's just like, pretended it didn't happen, and he sort of got back to his feet, tried to continue teaching the class. And then everyone was in horror, and then he just is like, actually, guys, call me an ambulance. but it was really bad, and it was just before he was scheduled to make his professional debut. I was so upset for him because he quit his job and everything. He was like, he was all in, and I was so proud of him for doing it. I was just like, wow, you know, that's a man who knows what he wants. He's taken all the necessary risks. He calculated the risks as well. But like, no one could have just predicted he would get injured in training like that. And it was bad. I didn't think he was going to fight after that. I really didn't. And he obsessed over his recovery. Like, whilst he demanded that the doctors had him one of them removable casts and said they wanted to put him in a solid cast.
Yeah.
And kind of went with his own instinct. And he's like, I want a removable cast so I can start flexing my toes whilst I'm recovering. And then he recovered so quickly. And then, of course, it was just over a year out. And then he went on a five-fight win streak as professional. His game had changed because his double-leg shoots weren't the same. But, do you know what I mean? It was so inspiring that you could have an injury like that and then go on to become such a successful professional. And then we're kind of back where we started now, at the start of his career. We're going through this all again, going through the painstaking recovery and then sort of just there's some doubts. But then at the same time, we were very confident. If anyone can sort of turn this around, it's Tom.
And having someone like that, obviously being your twin brother and having it right next to you, in your corner, in the gym with you and stuff like that, must give you a massive boost, obviously. Like you said, it's inspiring. So it's like, obviously, you lost your first pro fight and then you come back and you won your second.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's not going to be the perfect fairy tale, so to speak, but you've got the motivation and you both know where you want to go. And you both push each other to where you want to be.
And I think that's why people are going to tune in. They want to see champions like us. I think we're all done with sort of the cockiness and the arrogance people seen in MMA today. And we want to see true champions. That's exactly what me and Tom are. And it's like we represent pretty much everyone. You know, everyone has his bad luck. I used to have sort of people that say, oh, I could have done this, you know, but I broke my ankle. Like I've had people at work tell me stories like this, like, they had a dream once, but this happened. So, you know, and they had to give up on it. But I think me and Tom are sort of showing people that, no, you just do exactly what you want to do. When you sort of get knocked down or a problem presents itself, you just got to deal with that, keep moving forward. So, yeah. I like a lot of guys in MMA are sort of like, they don't even like to look vulnerable. End of the day, you're going into a fight. You're in the most vulnerable position like you could ever be in. It's a public spectacle. Like you could get humiliated in front of hundreds, thousands, whoever's watching it. It gets streamed online. Like you are really exposed. And me and Tom have already been through so much. And like, you know, we don't really care now. Like we just want to win. Like we're not too cared like what people think of us. But you watch with these nasty egos that are in the game at the moment. Most people are just scared what the public think. But they're not the ones doing it. You know? So
it's like, interesting.
It's not been a perfect story, and I'm kind of, that's the way I like it at the moment. We're just getting back up. We're still in this. We still want to do this. So
yeah, it's gonna be good. It's looking good for both of us, and I know you'll both get there. And it'll be tough for you, but it'll make you better fighters.
Oh yeah,
and better people.
Sure.
So so and like you said, people will appreciate it. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you were on, say, a show like the UFC and they'd done, like, the countdown and people were watching that, because I know a lot of people that watch the countdown, I myself watch it because I like to see what people actually do and what the real people are like, as not just the fighters. So if you can picture it, if you and Tom did one, they'd be like, oh, we had this setback, we had that setback, we had this setback. Straight away, you're gaining more of a fan base and an honest fan base because you're not, like... At the minute, I'm not a fan of Colby Covington, and because he's just a dick, but he's trying to make a personality before the fighting.
Yeah, I know the trash talk sells fights, but it's very rare that I'd do that. unless, you know, if I can get under a guy's skin, I might go for that. But yeah, I don't know. I just like to keep it classy, you know.
Yeah, it's
I'm more about being a martial artist, and martial arts is it's really just about improving yourself every day. So although it's a sport, in the long run, it's a martial arts, and it's kind of like being a better person every day, and just sort of being really true to yourself.
And the whole basis of the majority of martial arts, pretty much all of them, is self-discipline and respect and mutual respect. So people that are saying, "Oh yeah, I'm a taekwondo specialist or a kickboxing specialist and stuff like that," and then they come out and start talking all this crap about people and saying all this, that, and the other thing, you're thinking, the one thing, probably your first lesson that you go to, is about self-discipline and mutual respect for your opponent. Yeah. Like, I mean, obviously, at the start of every kickboxing bout, you bow down to them, to your opponent, and you touch gloves. Like, why have they forgot that fundamental thing of this sort of stuff?
I still keep all them traditions. You see me at the gym, I bow when I go onto the mats. People don't do that. But it's like, me and Tom actually come from more of a traditional background. It was Taekwondo first, and we had sort of strict regimes, you know, and we had to recite the oath at the start of every class. It's kind of like brain conditioning there, but at the same time, we will talk great respect, and I like to bring that through in all my fights. I always bow when I enter the cage, and I always show my opponents utmost respect, which is crazy, because at the end of the day, when they're in the cage, I want to hurt them.
Yeah.
But once it's all said and done, you know, I'm the friend. They're like, we need our opponents, because they're the people that test us. They're going to help me become the person that I want to become. Do you know what I mean? Become the very greatest version of myself. I need my opponents. So I've got to show them respect. And they train for every fight just the same way as I have. You know, well, I assume they probably don't train as hard as me. I train really hard. or maybe just not as smart. But we'll see.
So you're off to training today, You had your day off yesterday, your rest day.
Yeah, rest day yesterday. Usually on a rest day, I still just do some cardio. I love running. I absolutely love running. I do, so it's my headspace. The noise of the world just gets quiet when I go for a run. Nothing matters, I just run.
Yeah, I used to find that. Headphones in, just run. Yeah.
I do both with headphones in. When I'm like visualising fights, I like to put the headphones in, get some gangster shit on. And I sort of think, all right, I'll play the fight out in my head. And then that's what I like to do. And then sometimes I'll go without any headphones and I just want quiet. And then I can run for quite a long time. So, yeah. And I had rest day yesterday, and then today, wrestling, which I'm really looking forward to. It's actually one of the hardest classes of the week, I find. It's that constantly getting taken down and getting back up again. You get taken down, got to get back up again. It's just really exhausting. It's a tough class, the wrestling class. You do that on Sundays.
The last day of the week as well.
Yeah. So it sets you up all battered and bruised for the start of the week.
Yeah. So when you're getting ready for a fight, do you have like a sort of a go-to place? Like, you had your rest day yesterday. Do you anywhere you go or anything you do sort of just take your mind off the world to sort of recharge your batteries for an hour or so on your own?
Quite hard to take my mind off the fight. It consumes me when I've got a fight scheduled. My rest days tend to be on a Saturday. I just chill out with my girlfriend, but I like to be outdoors, so I like an active rest. I get, like, if I'm fighting and I'm watching TV, it's hard for me to switch off. I'll get kind of agitated, like, oh, I'm fighting, I'm not supposed to be doing this. I prefer to, like, go for walks, go for bike rides. And just running. That's not even much of a rest, really, is it?
I bet you don't get much peace and quiet living in Milton Keynes.
Milton Keynes, I love it. Those that don't know Milton Keynes would sort of see it as just roundabouts. Some friends have described it as a giant industrial estate, but really, when there's so many beautiful parts of it. And it's great for running. There's lots of lakes.
Yeah.
I like to run along the canal. There's lots of open space. And, like, anywhere I've lived in Milton Keynes, I've been able to just go for a run from my front door. I just jump straight out the front door and I run for miles. And then I'm back. And then I'm not having to, like, because we've got good redways as well. Like, when I'm down, my girlfriend lives in Hornchurch, and it's nice around there. But when I go for a run around there, I'm having to stop like every minute to sort of cross the road.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Milton Keynes isn't like that. It's really good. So if you're an active person, it's the perfect place to be.
All underpasses and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of greenland as well. You just got to know where to go to. Me and my brother, Linton Vassell, we love doing hill sprints at Bowbrick Hill. That's a hard hill that to do. We'll do like 5 sprints is all you need to do up it. It's so steep. I don't know what the gradient is. I need to check that out. But and it's probably just over 100 meters. I took a friend there once, and he's not out of shape, but he's not like a sports person. Yeah. He's not incredibly athletic as such. But he'd done a sprint, and then he'd done a jog, and then he was just throwing up like really badly. Like he disappeared, and I was like, "Where's he gone?" And then I went around the corner, and I'm gonna give him a quick shout out, Taylor Fawn, that's you. he's sitting on the bench, and he's throwing up. It's funny. It's so funny. But and he's just like, "I can't believe what you guys actually put yourselves through. Like, it's horrible." But yeah, so it's a great place for doing outdoor training, Milton Keynes. But yeah, so rest days I tend to just like going out exploring, and just chilling with my girlfriend, really.
Good stuff. So
yeah,
when you get to your fight, do you focus more on like, or do you, obviously most fighters look at what their fight has done in their previous fights and stuff. Do you try and base your plan, your fight plan around what they've done in their fights to what you're going to do? Or
yeah,
some guys just go in there with a plan. If that plan doesn't work, sometimes they crumble. But then they do everything they can to make that plan stick. Whereas some obviously look at what their other fighters do. Obviously you have to look a little bit into it. But then obviously you don't want to look too much into it, because then you end up fighting their game, and you could be going to what they're going of their fight plan, not your own.
Well, I feel like I've got like a style for all styles, really. So I just keep it my own way. And you can have a plan in a fight, but the problem is, what do you do when a plan goes wrong? You need a plan B as well. Like, some guys can go in with a strategy, and next thing you know, your opponent has actually changed some elements to their game. They've been at a different gym, like training new techniques. And it might not be the same opponent. You know what I like to do? You have to study your opponent. You need to know. That was one of the things I struggled with when I fought Julian. I was going in completely blind. I couldn't do any research because he fought in France, and there's some weird MMA rules in France. It's legal of some sort out there. But anyway, so what I like to do with a fighter, I like to actually watch. I like to watch the early fights and the late fights, and I like to see what progressions they've made. I don't just look at, oh, he does this, he does that. I like to watch how the style has changed and almost predict how it's gonna change. I did that for when Tom fought Aiden Lee. I watched his whole professional career from start to finish in consecutive order. So I was just like, okay. And the way he fought was kind of how I imagined the fight would go down. So yeah, I need to know what the main weapons are, look out for that. And then I just need to look at the evolution of the game, really. And then I kind of sort of see what kind of a mind I'm dealing with there, you know.
So like you're saying, you did that for Tom. Like, is that hard? Because obviously, if you don't do it as much yourself, being in the corner of your brother, do you really, obviously, because he'll have his own
this
way
one actually
sort of
been
to go.
This fight's been a bit different because, first of all, I was obsessing over Bellator with Tom. I'd watched my guy, so I knew what's up against, but I hadn't been like researching much at all. And then I was in Wembley for like the whole week. So I was at the gym that week, but I was just doing lots of running. London's not the great place to run around, not like Milton Keynes, but that had some challenges. With that fight, I was just. I really thought, like, I watched the guy and I was like, oh my gosh, like, Tom's got so many more tools than this guy. But MMA, that's kind of what makes it one of the best sports in the world, is how unpredictable this game is.
Yeah.
You know, the drama in MMA is unlike any other sport. And that's kind of what makes sports exciting, is the drama. But yeah, I always watch Tom's opponents. I feel like I've let him down a bit if I haven't taken the time to do that. But it doesn't really interfere with my own preparation. Not really. Only when I'm having to, like, travel a lot for his fights. Then it's time at the gym. But it's always been that way. It's like when I fought Adam Butterworth, I was in Norwich like a few weeks before, and I was just like, actually, I really need to, like, the fight's so close now. I need to be in the gym like right now. But I was for a few nights in Norwich with Tom. But you know, this, I'm still in the environment. I'm still studying the game. I'm watching other fighters. And then watching Tom fight gets me pretty motivated to just do my own thing. So
do you have sort of the same techniques, obviously, like with game plans and stuff like that? Obviously, you study for him, and does he study for you as well? And sort of like,
he sometimes does. Yeah, he does. I'd say he kind of helped tone down my style a little bit because I was a striker, and then he just gave me some sort of. Him and Danny just saying, like, you gotta, you're standing too tall, you're kicking too much, your legs are getting picked when you kick. So they sort of helped me sort of create my sort of hybrid sort of fighting style that I sort of compete with now. But I don't know, Tom's like my harshest critic, he really is. So, he's constantly picking at my game because he wants it to be perfect. So he used to annoy me. He's like, Richard, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong. But like, he knows how good my game is, but like, he'll talk about what I do wrong quite a lot. Because Tom's a perfectionist, really is.
Yeah.
When it comes to MMA, he's a perfectionist. but not in like his other aspects of life, hence why he doesn't shave much. he's the scruffy twin. Apparently he's the scruffy twin and I'm Moody Mearns, according to Danny. Danny Batten is our coach. But I don't think I'm moody, but apparently I am.
See, I can't comment on being the scruffy one. I've got a beard because I can't be bothered to shave, so.
Yeah. To be honest, I start looking more like him during fight camps though, because like, just like, I'm running in the mornings, I'm training in the evenings. It's just like, when do I have time to shave? it's honestly, things get really put to the bench, like when you've got a fight camp, just like day-to-day things that you don't even have time for. I really push myself. I work this full-time job and I train full-time when I've got fights coming up.
Obviously, like you said, it's sometimes little things that, in a sense, you sacrifice. Not saying shaving is a sacrifice, but little things like just small little details that you wouldn't normally do. Obviously, when you're in a fight camp, like you said, you're working and you're training and stuff, that you do give up in a sense or put on hold whilst you are in that training camp that you do.
Yeah.
Obviously, most people do it like with diets and stuff like that, but it could just be like if you go to a place or something like that twice a week normally when you're not and you're just training. But when you're in a fight camp, you stop doing that and just push yourself. And people don't realize that the amount of sacrifices people make whilst they're in a training camp or even when they get ready for a fight and fight week.
Yeah, it's not a normal way to live. And it's strange. Yeah, during fight camp, my hair gets scruffy, my beard grows out, my car stinks, my car gets messy, and so does my bedroom. It's just training kit everywhere. And I just like, and like when I get some time, I was like, should I clean my room now? Should I have a shave? And I was like, actually, I have some free time. I need to catch up on sleep. Sleep's, I'll tell you what, that's the biggest problem with working full time and trying to train for fights is getting enough sleep to recover. That's the biggest problem. But I really think like me and Tom were full time athletes. I couldn't believe what our potential would be. Like with what we've achieved so far. And what we're still achieving and the improvements we're still making, give us more time and then I really think we can be anywhere in this sport.
Yeah, see, like you said, both of you obviously work full time as well. Mm-hmm. Is your job supportive of what you're doing, and do they sort of, are they on board with where you can go and what what like what both of you is going to achieve. So like if you say I'm a bit battered today, like, and they're like, oh, take it easy a little bit, if they know you've got a fight coming up, or if you ask for an extra day off or something like that. And I'm not saying that you do, but if you did, are they supportive that way?
I make sure it doesn't interrupt my work as much as possible, because my job's important. Ultimately, that's what pays my bills at the moment. So if I'm messed up from training, I'm just going to work like that. I get the job done at work. Everyone likes it. Everyone supports me with it. They show me good support, all my colleagues. They congratulate me on my performances. And then, you know, when I lose, you know, they'll sort of be empathetic and they say, oh, you know, head up champ. And so my colleagues, they treat me well. But I keep the two separate, you know.
Yeah.
When I'm at work, I work hard. When I'm at training, I train hard. You know, and just wherever my current goal is, like if I'm at work, my goal is to get my job done. And then I'm fully in that. As soon as I leave work, I'm in the car, I'm driving straight to Northampton and I'm at training. At that time, the only thing that exists is my training. So I manage them both very well.
Yeah, see.
And both get me 100%. It's important. So I just do everything I can to my best ability.
Yeah, see, obviously, people don't realise. Obviously, they see you're a pro athlete. They're like, oh, people think automatically, he must have loads of money being able to train. He must be able to do this. He can do that. But they obviously, they don't see like the background of it. Obviously, like you work full time and stuff like that. I mean,
the hardest thing is having time for friends and family. You know, I don't want them to ever think that, oh, like, you know, I'm not interested in that. I'm just so busy. But that's the biggest blessing that would come with more time, is just spending more of my rest time with loved ones, you know. You know, I want to do something great with my life. I don't want to just live it normally. So whilst I'm in my competition years, I'm really going to push myself, and I'm happy doing that.
Yeah, do it while you can, obviously. Yeah. We're not young forever.
No. Yeah.
But yeah, if you obviously when you lost your first one and then when your second one, is there anything you've changed? Obviously, you like, I know what you and Tom are like. You constantly want to improve and you constantly want to get better. Yeah. Is there anything you've changed?
I've done the same thing I did when I lost my first two amateurs. So I lost my first one, and you wouldn't. I how much that ate me up. Like, me and Tom aren't okay with losing. We're just not okay with it. It eats me up badly. I dreamt about being a professional athlete my whole life, really. So when I was going pro, like, a loss is a loss. Right? If you ever compete at anything, the risk is always losing. You have to risk losing to ever be a winner. So, like, I understand it. I get it. It's all cool. But it really got to me. And at school, I played rugby. And then my head was in the clouds. And I thought, oh, maybe I could do this in a stadium. And then, of course, my martial arts career started with taekwondo. And I thought, imagine being in the Olympics. And then I went for that. I trialed for the Rio Olympics. And I thought, Jesus, I could... I'm actually doing this. And then I didn't actually meet the criteria. So I didn't get to the second stage of the trials. But still, I was just like, okay. And then I started competing in MMA. And I thought, okay, brilliant. And then I was scheduled to make my professional debut. And I thought, right, I'm doing this. And it was just to lose my pro career. My pro debut was just, it was gutting. But it was still important to me. I still wanted to do this. So I got back in there pretty soon. My brother said, look, you need to fight again. Like, because basically I'm like the worst kind of like guy upset. I was just, my body was like a fine tuned race car. I was in such amazing, incredible shape from that fight. And then, like, as soon as the fight was done, I was just like eating such terrible food. Like, I was just trying to get some sort of satisfaction. I think just really binge eating, really bad. And my brother's like, "What are you doing to yourself?" So he got me another fight. He says, I can't see you like putting weight on like this after, you know, what you've been through." So he got me another fight, which kept me fit. And then after the win, I wasn't satisfied at all. I'd still gutted about it, but I just did what I did with my my first amateur losses, and I just took, you know, I lost, so I thought, okay, well, why? And I evaluated why, and then I took some time out of competing. You can see that it's been a little while since I've been in the cage, and that's because I've just been ironing out them flaws again. So the first of all is with my amateur career, I was not a good grappler. So it was like a year before I got back in there, and that entire year was obsessing over my grappling. And then I went on my 6-fight win streak, and it got me through. No one tested me on the ground, like no one after that. So this time around, I took some time out and I thought, well, I just need to get better. I mean, obviously not as good as I thought I was. And let's do some more research and let's get better. I've been working. I won't say too much as to what I've been working on because I've got a fight coming up and then you guys can see it then. But I looked at what the problems were and I obsessed. My training this year, like I said, I've made huge improvements. It's been different from the other years. I've been smarter about my game and I've been looking at things that I need to work on. So I've improved big time. At the same time, my training partners, I've seen huge improvements in them. So training just keeps, I keep getting better, but training still keeps getting harder. So,
and another thing, so, obviously that's good. We're having Tom there as well. You're both competitive. I don't know how competitive you are with each other. It's a sibling rivalry, but it's more when it's twins.
Still whooped his ass, you know. I'm whooped his ass. Empire Grappling, I'm the champ.
It's good like that. And obviously, like you said, you've seen your team improve as well. So having active fighters, and even more having your brother there who's trying to boost his game, because you've got the same end goal. And competing against each other, I'm the same. It doesn't matter whether it's my brother, my sister, my nephew, my niece, my kids, anything. I do things to win. If I tell my kids now, they're 4 and 9. If you're gonna do something, you do it to win. Otherwise, there's no point doing it.
Like, I was with family yesterday. I was playing rock paper scissors with one of my little cousins. I didn't even want to lose on that. Didn't want to even give them a win of rock, paper, scissors, you know.
I'm even competitive at Christmas games.
Yeah.
It's one of them things. And things like that make you hungrier. Like you said, you've seen your team progress as well. When you're boosting your training partners, obviously, because Tom's, he was still active and he was obviously training for a fight and stuff like that, him getting better obviously makes you want to push yourself to make yourself better. And obviously things like when you're in that, when you're doing that jiu-jitsu competition and you were against each other, that's still, people will say, oh, they're brothers, they're going to take it easy. Yeah. No,
I told him to go for it. I said, Tom, go for it.
The rivalry is like. See, my dad's obviously fostering two kids and they've got sisters. And they fought each other yesterday. And when they got there in the kickboxing, my dad was trying to say to them, go for, because they were going to get gold and silver. They were going to try and share the royalties sort of thing. So want to get the gold in the points and want to get the gold in the continuous. Yeah. And he was like, go out there and have fun. And my niece turned around to me and said, these two don't like each other. And when they got there, one's bigger than the other, but they're in the same category. And they went hell for leather on it. My mom thought, I was like, what the hell? I was like, this is me and how my sister would be. We're going for this.
When I competed against Tom in the grappling, I've actually fought him in Taekwondo before as well when we was kids, probably like 10 or something. But with the grappling, it was an interesting bout between us. I said, go for it. But ultimately, I didn't care about winning or losing because it was my brother. But I was going to try my best. And it's like, you know, with grappling, you want to make sure you always got enough gas, your cardio can get you to the end of the bout. No one wants to look vulnerable or be vulnerable. So they'll sort of reserve themselves. They don't want to get tired, and because when they're tired, they're possibly going to get submitted. So I went in there and I said, well, it's your brother. He's not gonna kill you. So I went. And I pushed my physical limit in the bout. I was like, I got as tired as I can, because I knew that, well, I don't know, I didn't care about losing to Tom. And then at the same time, Tom, because it was me, Tom's a very top heavy pressure grappler, but he was like experimenting with his spider guard, his hooks guard, playing like some sort of proper jiu-jitsu underneath, which he doesn't do. He does, that's not his game. But it was, he was against me, and he thought, I think he was like, right, okay, I'm going to go for this, but I'm going to try a new game. I'm going to test myself there. And I think it was, there was zero pressure between us when we competed. So it was an interesting experience. And I do think we both gained quite a bit from it.
And this thing, obviously, you want to push each other more and more and more. So it's good that you're sort of bouncing off each other. So if, as bad as it sounds, like, obviously, if one gets better at one thing than the other, and then the other one gets better at the, something else than the other one, you can put that together, sort of, so to speak, where you basically, either side, you're pushing your own game and making your own game to the top level. But together, when you put your knowledge together side by side, you're creating two perfect athletes.
Yeah, perfect fighters, basically. The better he gets, the more improvements I'm able to make in the future. You know, I'd say Tom's the one that's pretty much guided me through my MMA career. He sort of always showed me what was possible. He was a very successful amateur, and we was fine at lightweight to begin with. And when he was like, okay, I'm going to cut to featherweight, I was like, are you mad? You, like, really? I knew nothing about the whole weight cutting scenario. Like, I just really uneducated with it. But Tom done the research, and he made a healthy weight cut. And then he fought featherweight first. I was like, wow. So he showed me that was possible, and now we're both, like, that is our division, and we're tearing it up. And then he got them amateur belts, and he done very successful there. Then he's like, okay, I'm making the jump to pro, and I thought, wow, that's amazing. I was so excited for him, but he's sort of been a few steps ahead, and he's been showing me how it's done. I really look up to Tom, and I do think he's, I know it's no cliche, but I really think he's the best fighter. Like, he's one of the best in the world. I really believe it. You know, he's not got that public exposure that, like, a lot of these fighters have. But when you spend as much time with him as I have, and you just get to pick his brain, you're like, wow, he's a really special individual. And, like, he's made of the same stuff as the greatest champions. And I'm his twin, so I'm like, wow, you know, if he can do this, I can do it. I can perhaps even do it better. Like, he shows me what's possible. And, like, the leg break, when he broke his leg, I was devastated. I think I get just upset about these things as he does. And I didn't think he would fight again. And then, boy, he proved me wrong. Like,
see, that's what I was going to ask.
That's when he went on his 5-fight win streak. And I'm like, whoa, gosh. He just shows me that you can do anything.
Is it just, like, as hard for you, obviously, it being your training partner and your brother, obviously, like what happened at Bellator? I mean, when I spoke to him the other day, I said to him, I've seen the devastation. Like, it was like everything had just been sucked out of him because it had happened in such a freak way.
He just looked at his arm. He wasn't even in pain. He was just like, really? Like, the expression on his face. Like, Tom's good with pain. Like, he wasn't bothered about the arm. He let them pop it back in and there. But he was just like, couldn't believe what had happened.
Yeah, and when he was kneeling down, obviously, like, it all just sort of, it's like someone had sucked his soul out of his body, and he just thought, like, obviously, because obviously I spoke to him before he actually fought, and when he, I know how excited he was for it and how much he trained and how hard you two had pushed each other to get to that point. So to be on that card, and then obviously something like that happened, like, I was sat watching it with my girlfriend, and I was just like, like, even I was like, genuinely devastating. And she was like, what's up? I was like, I know how hard these people work to get to this point, and I know how hard Tom's worked. I said, and everyone around him, I know how hard he's worked. I said, and for a freak accident like that, I said, and all people are going to see is that's a loss on his record. I said, and I said, I messaged Tom on the Saturday, I think it was, or the Sunday, and my missus was like, why have you messaged him? I said, like, I just said to him, look, keep your head up. I know how hard you worked. I know you're going to be back. Yeah, obviously, because people need them sort of messages. Like, obviously, I'm trying to get into the media side of it. Whereas, this is what I said to her. I said, I don't want to be like all these other media guys that just try and get an interview with guys, and that's it. They come in and ask the questions, and they want to ask what the fans say. I said, I want to build a sort of relationship, like, that people want to come back. Like, it was Tom that asked me to do the Facebook Live. Because I said to him, I'll happily get him back on the podcast. We'll go for over his recovery stuff. And he messaged me. He said, look, we'll talk again. And my missus was like, who's that messaging you? And I was like, oh, Tom's just messaged me. I said, after I'd messaged him saying, like, well, this, that, and the other, he messaged me and said, look, it's not even about my arm. It's about the loss. And I think that's the difference between some people and a lot of the fighters, because
in the ambulance, that's the only thing he was bothered about. He's like, I've lost.
And and to me, it's, that's the sort of thing as well, because obviously I've trained in martial arts before, so to me, and I've got the winning mentality as well, so that'd be the sort of thing for me as well. And straight away, Tom's like, obviously he was wondering how he can get back straight away, like, how soon can he get back? And like, the one I spoke to him afterwards, I just felt so sorry for him. It's just like, oh my God. I was like, yeah, but you don't get it, because she's not sport orientated, so she doesn't get what it means to win.
We don't train to lose, we train to win.
Yeah.
And too many sacrifices are made to get the win.
Yeah.
And when you don't get it, it really, it really is soul destroying, any loss. But you know, it's all good. Like, the fact you're even competing, that's what it's about. You have to get them wins, you risk losing, you know, so it's about being the best person you want to be.
Yeah, and like you said, obviously, when you had your first two losses, you sort of took a step back and forth. A loss could benefit someone drastically more than what a win could.
Yep. And like, there's many ways to go about it, but end result is you just got to make sure it changes you for the better. And that's how I've approached every time I've lost. Why, how, and what am I going to do next? You know, because people see perfect records and like, wow, that fight is amazing. But there's probably, they've been knocked down a million times before. And it wouldn't, they're fortunate it's not happened in their MMA careers. I mean, like, MVP had so much fight experience before going into MMA, and he's paid his dues prior to even going into the MMA game. You know, I'm sure he had so many kickboxing fights on, I think, and that's where he would have learned that winner's mentality, that now he's still undefeated in MMA. So,
and I use this example quite a lot. Like, people can see just what they want to see. So, like, what they see on social media, through, like, people in these big organizations. Like, the prime example I use is Ronda Rousey, Holly Holm.
Mm-hmm.
People were so shocked by it. I mean, Joe Rogan is probably one of the most guys I listen to about mixed martial arts, because he talks sense, because he's a guy that does commentary, does a podcast himself, he trains in martial arts. So he knows what it takes to get there. He knows how hard it is. So when Ronda Rousey fought Holly Holm, I actually gave Holly Holm the advantage starting of the fight. And as soon as the fight was announced, I said to my missus, I said, this isn't going to end well for Ronda Rousey. And she said, why? She says, why are you saying that? I said, basically, the basis is Holly Holm's a kickboxer, and I think she's a four-time world champion in three different weight categories.
Mm.
And she's had something like 75 professional kickboxing fights.
Yeah.
I said, Ronda Rousey is a judo specialist. I said, and she's used the armbar however many times. I said, but the media, the UFC, and everyone else has said, I get they want to make money from her. I said, she's a duck that shits golden eggs. I said, someone mentions her name and money gets printed. I said, which is good, all well and good. I said, but when the fighter starts believing that hype that they're unbeatable, is when they start to lose. That's so many
people's downfall. They believe what the media says about them and they're undefeated. And eventually they start to believe that too much and stop working on what got them there in the first place.
And like, a couple of my friends, like, obviously they've texted me because they know I've watched the UFC and stuff like that for a few years. Mm. They were like, oh, what do you think about the Ronda Rousey fight? I said, she couldn't get knocked out. I said, if Holly Holm can keep this standing, I said, she's gonna beat her. I said, and it's not going to be a shock. Mammy was like, nah, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And then when it happened, she was like, how the hell did you know that? I said, the fight starts standing up. I said, the game plan Ronda Rousey had to do was had to get her to the ground. I said, all this build-up, all this media attention. I said, Dana White is probably the worst person for it. I said, because he's made her believe she cannot be beat.
Yeah.
They're saying she's the greatest female athlete of all time.
Yeah.
I said, and all it takes, I said, and in this sport, it only takes one kick or one punch and the game's over.
Yeah.
I said, and look what happened. I said, the people that Holly Holm were training with, I mean, she trains in Albuquerque, New Mexico with John Jones, who's got the best takedown defense in the UFC history.
Yeah.
Like 86.4% or something. Mm. I mean, so if she could train with him and she could stop the takedown, she stopped Ronda Rousey's game plan.
Yeah.
And then everyone was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's a massive shock. And I was like, well, no, it's not. It's it's a 50-50 like, fight, basically.
Holly Holm was kind of like a matador in that fight. Just the way she was slipping these takedown attacks, and she would just go out to the side and then boom, head kick.
And I think the advantage with some people, not in like the same sort of sense to you and Tom, but kind of similar, like obviously from what you've been through, obviously your setbacks and stuff like that, it's they see it as you've got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And someone that's got nothing to lose to someone that's got everything to lose is more dangerous because they don't have to go in there and win because people aren't expecting them to win.
Yeah.
And it proves more of a shock when they do win, but not when the other person loses, because obviously everyone's human. So if you're going in there and everyone's like, no, this guy ain't got a chance, all this, that, and the other. And like, again, if you're reading this on social media or all this, that, and the other, and people are saying, oh, this guy's shit, can't do that, he's only got one thing. And then you go in there and do it, and people are like, all right, yeah, like, this is, all right, yeah. And then they start looking into what you're actually about. And obviously, like with Tom, with his broken ankle, and his broken arm now, people are going to be like, nah, he's had these injuries, all this, that, and the other. So when he comes back and wins, people are going to be like, oh, shit, like, in a sense. But I know from, obviously, speaking to you and Tom, that yous don't see it as that yous have got nothing to lose. Yous are hungry, and no one can deny that yous, that both of you are not hungry. You're probably the two hungriest guys I've spoke to about the sport. Obviously, you get people that say, oh, yeah, I want this more than anything, trained as hard as I can. And then when you see them actually perform, and you're thinking, did you really?
Like, I see some guys just trying to really create an identity for themselves and using MMA to do that. It's not about that for me and Tom. It's really about, we've got a talent here. Let's see how far we can take this.
Yeah, like I was saying, you two both hunger. Obviously, we know Tom tried out for the Ultimate Fighter for this series.
Mm.
And you tried out for the Olympics. People might not see that, yeah?
No.
Because obviously that can't go on a record or anything. They can't have like your amateur record or your pro record and then in brackets, oh, tried out for the Olympics or tried out for the Ultimate Fighter. But for both of you, that's... If you made it to the Olympics, that's pushing you in your sporting career. That's an achievement, and that's going to make you better as a person. And the same with Tom. If he'd have got to the Ultimate Fighter, whether he won the competition or not, it's the achievement of getting there. I know that's what Tom wanted. He wanted just to get there and then take the next step. Like he said, he plans a couple of months in front. So if he'd have got there, that's one achievement, goal made. Then he plans for the next one. And then obviously, I think you'd be the same sort of thing. Obviously, if you'd have got, you planned to go try out for the Olympics. If you'd have got to the Olympics, then you'd have thought, right, now it's the next one.
Yeah.
It's short stepping stones to keep yourself going, to making sure that you're still hungry. And obviously, you're both wanting the same goal. You both want to make it in the sport. You both want to be able to do it full time. You both want to be the best. It's obviously everyone that's in the sport wants to be the best. But like you said, some people try and do it for identity. People want to make more money than... Obviously, everyone has to make money. This is a kind of balance that people need to stop realizing at. But if you want to go in there and be an identity and make money, you need to have the fighting to back it up. Whereas I think you and Tom want to show the fighting and not the identity. You want to gain the identity from your fighting, which is, to me, I'm kind of old school like that as well. Like, if people are going to say, oh, who's this guy? And you go in there and absolutely dominate the guy. Like with Tom's fight in the first round, I had a 10-8 because it was just a dominant performance, absolutely dominant performance. And then people are going to be like, oh, this guy might be for real. Like, but he's not come out and he's not spoke shit. He's not trashed the guy. He's not said, oh, this guy's this guy's that. You're creating your identity and your fan base from your fighting.
Yeah.
And it's not, you're not going to get to the stage where you get there and you're fighting the bigger shows and stuff like that. Yeah. And then you'd be like, all right, now I'm going to just start being a dick. Like, because I want that fan base and stuff. If people realize that they can make just as much money as these guys talking the crap, if they went in there and actually pushed themselves in the gym and finish the fights in devastating fashion or put on such a performance and stuff. Like, one comment from one sort of journalist or Dana White or something like that, that they've seen this fight, and like, you go in there and dominate a guy for 15 minutes, take him down, beat him up and stuff like that, and then he does it. I mean, look at Khabib and Ali Aquinter. Khabib just beat him up for 25 minutes. Yeah. And everyone's like, oh my God, he's scary. But to me, they're on different levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not taking it away from Khabib because he is a scary dude.
Yeah, very scary.
But
I wouldn't want to fight him. Yeah, yeah.
But that's the thing.
I would, though. If they wanted to pay me to fight Khabib, I'd love that. But, yeah.
I'm sure I could get down to that weight if he wants. He could beat me up for 25 minutes if he wants.
yeah, definitely.
But that's the thing. He's not going out there and he's only replying to what people are saying to him.
Yeah.
It's, obviously, you've got your Conor McGregor's that people are saying stuff to him, but he's replying, but he's saying it louder.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, obviously, like, Khabib's just like, do you know what? Let's just get in the octagon and fight. Let's go. And he silently got himself up the ladder. And now he's the champion. Everyone's sort of like, all right, we're gonna look back on this guy or this, that, and the other. I mean, I found the video years ago of him fighting a bear when he was like 9.
It's funny that. Yeah. It's crazy. That bear can wrestle as well. It's fascinating to watch. Like, it's unbelievable. But what a career that guy's had, eh?
And he almost gave it up as well.
Yeah.
Because he had stomach problems, didn't he?
He has a hard time cutting weight, I think. Likes the tiramisu. That's what the rumours are. I don't know.
And obviously that's another issue with fighters at the minute as well, with all this weight cutting and stuff like that. Everyone's saying, oh, they should have more weight categories and stuff like that. And to me, I'm like, well, no, they shouldn't. Like, if they bring in more weight categories, that's just more weight categories for people to miss weight.
Yeah. No, I don't think more weight categories would... I mean, if there was a 68 category, oh, man, I'd love that. Me and Tom, we do quite a lot of weight, but we do it successfully each time. That's why it shocks me when I see these professionals missing weight. Me and Tom are professionals, but we're not full-time in this. And I'm like, when I see them miss weight, I'm like, how? How is that possible? Because, like, I mean, I work in an office. Like, I'm able to make weight whilst training a full-time job. Like, if I didn't have a full-time job and I was worried about my weight cut, I've got extra hours in the day to go for more runs, to go swimming if I'm too sore to run. I get the weight off easy if I was a full-time. And also, to get the weight off, you've got to make sure you maximize your sleep. Sleeping is an important part of losing weight. I don't get lots of sleep at the moment, you know, because of my training schedule. But so it surprises me that these professionals miss weight. But I think ONE FC have been very successful with the way they've implemented their weight cut. They've resolved the issue. It's quite complex. I couldn't quite explain it. But what I think the issue there is that you need more funding to, because they do hydration tests on all their athletes throughout the course of a week.
Yeah.
So, of course, you've got to employ more medicals and you've got to keep tabs on every fighter that's on the card. So it's kind of more stress on the promotion and it must be quite hard to do. More weight classes would give people an option to pick a safer weight. But you always get them people think, you know, I'm fine at this weight, but the little guy in the division down from me, I could kick his ass. And then they'll because we're fighters, they're all crazy, and we would try to push the boundaries again. And that's the problem with the weight cutting scenarios, is when you're dealing with fighters, you're not dealing with normal people. These are people trying to push boundaries, and unfortunately they push the boundaries when it comes to cutting weight as well. And then, you know, when cutting weight, your body tells you you're in pain, you need to drink some water. But these fighters we block out pain, and we don't always listen to them instincts, you know, when we've got a goal. So I think that's what's dangerous about it is people pushing themselves too much. And I saw that Darren Till video
when he
missed weight recently. See, it was not
I get sad. That he was doing the weight cut and everything like that, and I fully understand what a weight cut is about. What I didn't get is why he did it on the Friday before weigh-ins. That's the most puzzling thing to me, because obviously he had complications. So to me, a sensible thing would have been to do it on the Thursday or even the Wednesday, or cut half fit Wednesday.
What day were the weigh-ins?
They were on a Saturday.
On Saturday, okay.
Yeah, so he'd done his weight cut on the Friday. He started it Thursday night and then was at the gym 6 o'clock on the Friday morning and done the rest of the majority of it on the Friday. Yeah. But to me, it had been, I don't know if I'm missing something with it. I mean, I've spoke to Craig White on social media. He's obviously just been signed with the UFC. And I said, surely it'd be better to, because I've seen people say the week of fight week on these promotions like the UFC, Michael Chiesa put up that when you get to fight week, the UFC pay for your hotel and your flights from the Saturday or Sunday, I think it is. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to pay for that. So you can turn up and you can use all the facilities that are there. You can use the UFC gym and everything that's in Las Vegas if your fight's in Las Vegas. So you've got no reason to not start your cut when you turn up because you've got all the officials there. I mean, where they do the Ultimate Fighter, there's people there because that's where they work. And then you've got the gym facility that they've got there. I can't remember what it's called. But they've got that whole complex where they're doing more performance institute things. Yeah. They're doing more science things. So they're saying you can go there and you can use them facilities of Fight Week for free. It's not costing you anything. It's not taking any time out your day. Obviously, it depends if you're training really, really, really hard Fight Week or if you use Fight Week to do it a bit more relaxed or if you're in the middle. But going to an institute like that, surely you can... You can use that and say, right, I'm going to go there. I'm going to start my weight cut on the Monday. I'm going to do a couple of pounds this day, a couple of pounds that day, a couple of pounds this day. So when you get to the Wednesday or the Thursday, or maybe even the Friday, whenever you want to start cutting weight, it's a couple of pounds because I know the couple of pounds are the hardest things to take off, the last few. So if you give yourself an extra day, like with Darren Till, he had complications. So if he'd have started that a day earlier, he'd have had a full 24 hours to cut that extra couple of pounds off.
Yeah. I mean, that week, it's all water weight you're losing. And that's, you're not losing any body fat. I need to do more research in the science of it. But usually, you know, I'll lose a lot of weight during the week through water loading techniques. And then I do my final cut. I do it on the morning of the weigh-ins. I do like over 5 hours, I'll lose all the weight. Tom did it a bit differently for Bellator. I might try that next time. He'd done a bit night before and a bit on the morning of the fight. And I felt like actually that seemed like maybe a better way. But
obviously,
it's the ugly part of the sport. It takes away from the actual fight.
Yeah, because overall, basically, the main goal is fight safety.
Yeah.
And people don't see that. Like I had a lot of people saying the day before about Yoel Romero. Because obviously he weighed in a pound overweight for the title. Mm-hmm. So they gave him an extra hour. And then he still weighed in 2 ounces over. And everyone's like, oh, but it's 2 ounces. Why not just let him fight? Why not just let him fight? And I seen a guy on Twitter, actually. He put it perfectly. He said, it's just completely unprofessional. If I turned up to my job late, he said, I wouldn't blame my job for me being late. Whereas obviously you sign a contract to say that you are going to be bang on this weight. And if you're not... You're not going to fight for this title. You're not going to earn this money. So I get that he's probably absolutely tortured himself to get to that 185.2. But he signed a legally binding contract to get that extra 2 ounces off and to say he'll be ready. So for everyone to say, oh, that shit, that they've taken the title off him. No, it's not. If you go anywhere, if you even take a phone contract out and you don't pay them the day that they say to you, they can cancel your whole contract and you pay them the whole thing.
Yeah,
it's basically like them suing, and people don't realize that the UFC and Robert Whittaker could sue Yoel Romero for missing weight. It could be,
especially for a title, you're obliged to make that weight. They got an allowance like for like non-title fights, don't they?
Yeah, but,
When I was fighting in my amateurs, and I had two British titles, you got to be 65.7 for the title, but an average featherweight bout, you can be 66.2.
Yeah.
And it's an extra 0.5 or something like that to make title weight. And when I fought Justin Springer, that took me, it was a whole more hour of pain I was going through just to make the weight for the title. It was so frustrating because I was just like, yeah, yes, 66, I'm featherweight now. I'm ready. And Tom's like, we've got to get to this title weight. And I was in so much pain, and I was just like, but I'm not at featherweight, And then I was just with my sweatsuit on. Like I couldn't bear going back in the bath again, so I had to do the rest with a sweatsuit. But it was actually very challenging. Just making normal featherweight or making championship weight. It took an extra hour to get to championship weight. So it's crazy. It's a crazy game.
Yeah, and obviously people don't see that. People don't see how hard it is. I mean, I actually had an argument with a woman on a fighter on Twitter. I can't remember her name now, but she's just kickboxing K1 and she's now an MMA. Overall, she's got a record of 25-4 or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And I commented on something and she was like, have you ever done a weight cut before? And I think she was expecting me to be like, no, but I actually went through a quite horrific weight cut. I was completely uneducated, not for anyone else, but for myself, of how to do it. So I looked into it a little bit and everyone was like, oh, you should do this. And I'd done like water for the whole 2 weeks that I was training. I was drinking lots of water and then obviously sweating it out and stuff like that. And in a week, it was like 8 days, I lost a stone and a half in weight.
Oh, yeah.
And in one day in the gym, I lost 7.2 pounds. And I ended up in hospital with a swollen heart.
Oh.
I had a suspected heart attack. And because obviously when I was training, I felt all right. I just felt a bit drained. And I didn't realize how much weight I'd actually lost in that one day.
You need really good cardio to do a successful weight cut. My heart is pounding when I'm raising my body temperature and losing all that sweat. I feel like me and my Tom cut too much weight. Well, not really. But we cut what all the pros are cutting. And we're not big enough to fight a lightweight. But when we're going through the weight cut, what keeps us calm, what keeps us cool and composed when you're sweating out them kilos is having great cardio, being in control of your breathing and your heart rate. It gets you through a good weight cut, strong cardio. That's why I like doing my long distance running as well. Yeah.
Right, I've just realised the time. I know you're busy. I know you're getting ready to go to training. So I'm going to thank you for your time and let you get to training. And
thanks to you, man. I really appreciate you having me on. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a pleasure's all mine. It's me coming to you. But yeah, good luck for your fight and look forward to watching it. Hopefully we'll have a chat again soon.
Just to remind people, that's July 7th, fighting Bane Dundavan. And it's going to be great. It's going to be a great fight. Well, if he can hang at my level, then it's going to be a great fight. If not, I mean, I've made huge improvements this year, so it's going to be a great performance either way. That's July 7th. Fight Star Championships.
Good stuff. If you've got any sponsors or anything, anyone you want to shout out, then fire away.
Yeah, just a few thank yous. First of all, I just want to thank all my training partners, all my coaches, Danny Batten, Raymond Paul, Lee Edwards, John Graham, all the coaching team at BST. They helped me get to where I am today. Sponsor, I'd like to thank CBD Life UK. I'd like to thank you for having me on today. And I think that's it, really. Yeah. Good stuff. People can use, those that are interested in using CBD products, they got a choice of two discount codes here. They can use they can use MERNS 15 for 15% off. I'll let you give a shout out now.
That's all right. They can use yours. I've got a competition coming from CBD Life, hopefully in the next week. I emailed them just to see how they were going, if anything I could do to help promote them a bit more and stuff like that. And they suggest that we do a competition together. So for people that will listen to this, we are going to have a CBD Life competition to win some stuff from CBD Life. So I'm going to get that set up and I'll let people know and we'll share it. More than likely it'll be, you like their page, share their page and like my page. And I'll pick a winner. So yeah. I just want to give a shout out to Ultimate Fighting Outlet as well. They were kind enough to jump on board and give me a discount code as well. So if you go and check them out at UFO MMA on Twitter and ultimatefightingoutlet.co.uk and use a discount code Monstars MMA, you get 10% off your order.
That's good.
So, yeah, we're looking for more. Okay. I've got a few more in the works.
Just one more thing. Just want to wish all the people listening, wish them a great day too. And thanks for anyone supporting me and Tom on our journey so far. We do get a lot of feedback on social media, just lots of people messaging us and wishing us well. I want to thank anyone that's tuning in, supporting us on this journey. So thanks to them. Yeah, that's perhaps very, very important to thank the people supporting me.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I look forward to watching both of your journeys and hopefully we'll speak again. And obviously we've got plans for a few months' time. So when we get that sorted, people will have more of an in-depth picture about you two as well.
Awesome.
Good
stuff.
Thanks,
man.
Enjoy your day. Thank you very much.
You too. Have a great day and all the best.
Cheers. Yeah.